I'm reading from Matthew 7, 24 to 27. It says this, "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall, because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash."
Hello, it's so good to be with you today. You know, each time that I prepare a talk for our community, I start with pretty much the same sentence, and it goes like this. Hi, my name is Kirsten, if we haven't met, and I'm one of the pastors here at Living Waters. Now, most of you have been around long enough to know a bit about who I am, so I just stick to a one-line intro. But if I was speaking to a community that didn't know me, I'd say a bit more. Perhaps that my husband David, our three kids, and myself all love books, and that I'm especially in love with The Lord of the Rings. I might say that I grew up in the United States. It's true, I did. Or that I paint when I can. I might say that I always finish my puzzles. Why do I introduce myself? Well, because if I'm going to connect with you, which I'm trying to do, I need to tell you a bit of who I am. I need to give you a glimpse into my identity. None of us are comfortable listening to a talking head that we know nothing about. I'm certainly not. I'll listen to someone for a few minutes on YouTube, and then I'll ask, "Who is this guy?" and go look them up. Every person speaks out of their own identity. Who I am matters. We're starting a new sermon series today called Who Am I? Somehow, each of us in our life has to come up with some sort of answer to the question of who we are. And the answer that we come up with matters. Each of us lives out our sense of who we are every day. It shapes how we read people. It shapes our perspectives and our ideas. It shapes what we do and what and who we allow into our lives, what we say yes to and what we say no to. Our family sees ourselves as campers, so we say yes to camping every summer. Part of my sense of self as a woman involves cooking, so I often make dinner, plus my family's hungry. Another part of my self-understanding is that I am a sloppy dishwasher, so David washes the dishes. We see ourselves as readers, and so we buy books. We see ourselves as being bad at house projects, so we avoid them unless absolutely necessary. But tell me this, how did I or you develop our understanding of who we are? How did our past shape our sense of self? Out of all the things that shaped us, our race, our sex, our socioeconomic status, our families, our gifts and skills, our work, our loves, our relationships, our pain, our faith, how did the identity you live with that shape your life come to be? This can be a very difficult question to answer. Identity formation is something that happens to us. It's not something that we consciously do. Tim Keller says that we are no more aware of how our identity is shaped than a fish is aware of the water it's breathing and swimming in. Like a fish, we swim in our contemporary culture and subconsciously adopt its assumptions about how we interpret our lived experience and build our sense of self-understanding. This series is an attempt to look at the water we're swimming in with a critical eye, hopefully an eye shaped by our life of faith with Jesus. When I think of identity formation, I think of the story Mike just read to us from Matthew 7. This story of the wise and foolish builders is the very end of what is arguably Jesus' most famous sermon, often called the Sermon on the Mount, because it was given on a mountain. The story describes two builders, and the difference between the two is what they build on. The foolish builder builds their house on something unstable, like sand. But the wise builder builds their house on a rock. And when the winds, the floods, and the storms come, only the wise builder's house remains standing. This is not actually a story about building houses, although there's probably some good building principles here. It's a story about how we build our lives. And it has everything to do with the formation of our identities. I think that this story shows us both what we fear and what we want. We fear discovering that our life has no foundation, that when the winds and rains come, it will wash away. What we want is a life that is resilient and stable, a life that can withstand the storms of life. Our culture has a particular way of developing a sense of self, but it is not stable. It isn't stable because it doesn't take our brokenness into account, and it's not consistent with the way we were designed as human beings. It isn't stable because it isn't built on the rock. A resilient and stable life comes from a resilient and stable identity. And that's the kind of identity that Jesus wants for us. We may think of identity as being too postmodern, too contemporary of a concept for Jesus. As you read the Bible, though, you find that Jesus is all about identity. He doesn't just come to save us from our sins. He comes to transform our understanding of who we are. Identity formation is the subject for the philosophers, and I am certainly not a philosopher. But I want to give you some food for thought about how identity formation happens in our contemporary culture. And then I want us to look at it from a biblical perspective, to consider what parts of it may indeed lead to a house that is built on something as unstable as sand. Let's start with a brief description of identity. When we're talking about a person's identity, we're talking about the unique set of characteristics that can be used to identify a person as themselves and no one else. It's what validates a person. It's what gives them their sense of worth. Our identity is shaped by a wide range of characteristics, things like our physical characteristics, our race, our sex, our hair color, our eye color, our body type. It's shaped by our social context. What family did we grow up in? Were we the oldest or the youngest in our family? Our friendships, our community, our culture, our faith, our economic status. Our identity is shaped by our personality. Are we an extrovert or an introvert? What are our interests? What are our skills? What are our abilities? Our identity has to do with how we see ourselves as being different from others. And we grow in our understanding of our identity as we begin to see how we are the same person in different situations, at work, at home, at school. We grow also in our self-understanding when we see how we are the same person over time. That's one reason why it takes time for our identities to grow as people. I think it's safe to say that for all of us, our sense of identity is deeply personal. When something that is central to our self-understanding feels like it's being threatened, touches a nerve in us, we can have strong reactions. That's why going through mental or physical illness is both difficult physically, but also emotionally. Our bodies or our minds aren't working the way they used to, and it threatens our sense of self. I feel like I don't know who I am anymore is a common feeling when our bodies or our minds don't work the way we're used to. A person's first experience of disappointment with God can shake a person's identity, or a person's struggle with temptation and sin. Whatever shakes our sense of identity is deeply personal. We have strong reactions when our sense of our identity is threatened. It's important for us to recognize that the way we form our identities is shaped by culture. People have not actually shaped their self-understanding the way we do today, which I find fascinating. And I want to give credit to Tim Keller because I'll be pulling a lot from his great discussion of identity formation. And he actually credits the work of Christian philosopher Charles Taylor as well. Isn't it great to have good, incredibly bright people that we get to benefit from? Keller describes the way identity formation happened historically in traditional cultures. If you go back and look in history, you find that in many cultures, people lived for honor. They developed their sense of self through fulfilling the roles established by them in society. For women, this often involved having a lot of children. For men, it was winning battles. In most cultures, there was a sense of an absolute moral order, and the honorable thing was for a person to deny their selfish desires in order to follow that moral order. If you fulfilled your societal role and followed the prescribed moral order, you received validation from your community, and this is how you got your sense of self. The validation of your identity came from outside yourself, from your family, from your community, from the sense of having fulfilled one's duty. You can see examples of this when you look at historic cultures, and we're probably most familiar with biblical examples. I think of Rachel and Hannah, which are both women in the Old Testament who experienced social shame that was removed once they were finally able to birth a child. I think of David, who first wins the respect of the Israelites through his successes in battle. There are still cultures in our world today that function in this way. And sometimes we still get our sense of worth from a more traditional sense of identity formation. Over the last 500 years, though, Western culture has slowly shifted away from this traditional identity formation, and a new way has emerged. I would call this postmodern identity formation. The goal of our postmodern era has been to free the individual, each person, from an imposed identity. Think about what I just described in traditional identity formation. There is little or no space for individuality in the kind of identity formation we just talked about. Doing the honorable thing, what is best for your community, what's expected of you, is what gives you value and worth. It's an identity that is placed on you that you fulfill. Postmodern identity formation is the attempt to live in a way that reflects not the outward expectations from society and culture, but the individuality of the person. And Dallas Willard affirms that this concern for the individuality of the person is legitimate because God made us to be unique. He says there are no carbon copies for saints. Sinners, they're all the same. That's why you look at one dictator and you've seen them all. But saints are utterly unique. We are made uniquely in the image of God. The concern for our postmodern society is for an identity that comes from the uniqueness of the person, not from their role and position in society, but from the essential person. It's the hunt for an authentic identity. And this hunt for an authentic identity has led us to approach identity formation in a different way. In our contemporary culture, we find our authentic self by looking inward, by looking at our thoughts, and even more at our emotions and desires. In fact, there's no sacred order that defines goodness for us broadly as a society. And our culture would say that goodness is found in our own desires, not in anything outside of ourselves. We craft our own understanding of what is good. The path forward towards living out our authentic identity therefore becomes the affirmation of our desires. Since our sense of self is bound up in our deepest desires, our self-worth is dependent on giving dignity to and asserting those desires in spite of the world around us. We hold out our sense of self and say, hey, this is who I am, and you need to respect who I am. So our role in identity formation is to look at our deepest desires to decide who we are and to determine what's right and wrong. And then we move out of ourselves and call the culture to honor us because that's who we are. Have you heard people talk about my truth? I keep hearing that when people talk in our culture. And I think that when people say that, they're talking about their internally crafted sense of self. The narrative of our culture is that if we suppress our desires, we will not be fully ourselves and will therefore not be healthy or happy. But if we are true to our emotions and desires, we will be healthy and happy. One of the ways that you can see these themes in our society is in the stories we tell. Look at the heroes in our movies. Most of the stories we tell are about people being heroic through discovering who they are and being who they are in spite of a lack of acceptance from their world. Classic example is Elsa from Frozen. And yes, she is currently on the cover of my daughter's lunchbox. But think about Elsa. Think about when she sings, "Let It Go." Elsa escapes to the mountains, builds an ice palace, and sings about how she can't hold back her powers anymore. And why in this scene is she a hero? Well, she's actually abandoned her role as the leader of her people, and she has actually blasted the country that she loves with eternal winter. But she is a hero because she's made a first step towards embracing and accepting who she is. She is following our culture's process of learning who we are. We listen on the inside to our passions, our desires, and our drives, and we follow where they lead. I'm not sure how much you can identify your own thinking in this process of identity formation that I'm describing, but this kind of thinking shapes us in many ways. We're shaped through the stories we watched, the social media we absorb, the culture we live in. If you begin to look for this internal creation of the self, you'll find that it's everywhere. And if you've tried to live out of a postmodern identity, you may find that it's difficult. And there's some reasons for that. A postmodern identity is inconsistent. If an authentic identity, an understanding of right and wrong, is entirely based on our desires and feelings, then our identity is as inconsistent as those emotions. Our feelings can contradict each other. Feelings I have today are certain to conflict with feelings I had 5 years ago because I have changed. 5 years ago, I was convinced I'd homeschool my kids till my youngest was 18. And, you know, she's currently 7, and I happily drive her to school each morning these days. We need something more stable than our own emotions to give us a sense of who we are. A postmodern identity is also fragile. The modern self is incredibly fragile because it's up to you to decide if you are a good person or not. And we're not meant to develop our sense of self in isolation, but in community. We need someone outside, from the outside, to tell us that we're okay, because that's how God made us. And if we try to live without that word from the outside, we end up with fragile identities. Charles Taylor talks about how this is why people in our society have a constant need for affirmation, why they're unable to cope with any level of disagreement, and why any degree of disagreement is seen as an attack. Even when we try to develop an authentic identity that comes entirely from ourselves, we are constantly on looking for someone beyond ourselves to tell us that we're okay, because that's how we're made. A postmodern identity can also be overwhelming. Traditional identity is all about fitting in and conforming to one's community. Our contemporary identities are all about standing out and being special, doing great things.
All you have to do is scroll through social media to see it. We live in a world where people feel a relentless compulsion to prove that they are unique, that they are special. Think about the phrase, I want to be someone. When someone says that, what they're really saying is that they want to stand out. It might be helpful to ask why we are only someone when we stand out. Didn't each of us become someone when we were conceived in our mother's womb? This drive to stand out and be special was the central focus of the fine arts department when I was working on my art minor in university. The pressure to always do something original, new, or unique was relentless. In my early 20s, I found it impossible to navigate these expectations in the art community while still following Jesus. It's exhausting to constantly be unique. And finally, I'd suggest that a postmodern identity ultimately isn't possible. It's impossible for us to create an entirely internal identity, because ultimately, every person is choosing from different possible identities. And the way we do that is through the grid of our culture. It's impossible to keep from being shaped by the world around us. Now, I just want to share two final comments about why a postmodern identity doesn't work when we look at it from a biblical perspective. A postmodern identity doesn't work because it doesn't take into account our human brokenness. We believe that no part of us is free from brokenness or sin. That includes our thoughts, our emotions, our bodies, our desires. Every part of us is broken in some way, shape, or form. If an entirely internal identity was to work, we would need to be able to trust that our emotions and desires were not broken. How else could they be a guide for us to follow? Healthy respect for our emotions is so important, of course. Our emotions are a gift that tell us how we're doing. They speak to us. We learn from them. We need to listen to our emotions. But that doesn't make them a guide. Our capacity to understand our identity would also require us to have a mind that isn't broken. And our minds are broken, easily deceived and confused, unable to see the whole picture. It's impossible for us to create an entirely internal sense of self if we are broken, sinful people. What I find so interesting is that our culture really knows this, even though they pursue this kind of identity formation. As the great contemporary philosopher Taylor Swift says, "It's me. Hi, I'm the problem. It's me." This is the chorus that's sung over and over again in Taylor Swift's current top song, Antihero, which broke tons of records this last year. It is the top song on the top album of 2022, and people are currently spending ridiculous amounts of money to hear Taylor Swift in concert. And that's the chorus. There must be something here that speaks to what people experience day in and day out. And the whole song is a sustained reflection on how the problem that the person is fighting is her own self. It's almost like she's been reading Romans 7, written by Paul. Postmodern identity formation doesn't take into account our sinfulness, and it also doesn't take into account our design. And I'm just going to touch on this because Luke and Dave are going to be talking about this in the next couple weeks. Our culture's system of looking inward for a sense of self cuts people off from what actually gives them a sense of identity. Validation from God and validation from community. We were never designed to create our understanding of the world and our understanding of ourselves in isolation. We were meant to receive validation and worth from our Creator. We were meant to receive affirmation from each other. Today, we focused on what doesn't work, which I can understand might be a bit discouraging. But the hope in this is that we recognize the ways that we've been following the world system for identity formation, that we can allow Jesus to show us a better way, a way that leads to a foundation for our lives that is strong and secure. And that's what we're going to be talking about in the coming weeks. Jesus wants our relationship with him to shape every aspect of our self-understanding. He wants us to have a fully redeemed identity. At the end of time, when we meet Jesus, we will be fully human and we will be fully ourselves. It will no longer be a struggle to do what is right because our understanding of who we are will be fully redeemed. Think of what it will be like to fully trust Jesus and the people that we love, to never doubt that we are lovable and loved. Imagine what it will be like to delight in doing what is right, loving and serving others, and what it will be like to be fully at peace with who we are. Think of what it will be like to be more fully your unique self than you have ever been. Jesus wants to begin to give us this kind of redeemed identity now. It will never be complete until we see him face to face. But wow, I want as much of that kind of identity as I can right now. It's so much better than what I can build on my own.